So this afternoon, we're going to start off continuing on with observations of fluorescents and wavelengths, and we're going to be at M33, Knox Wall from the Space Telescope Science Institute. It's the house of our new radio survey in M33.
I heard everybody would come back and watch on time, not that hard. I do want to talk to you about new radio survey that I'm very pleased to be doing with collaborators, namely Red Point, Tom Becker, Bill Harris here, and Jim Longchamp, and Frank Luther, who's also here. So, as was emphasized this morning, supernova events are multi-wavelength objects, and the real goal of the fact they're not to provide closer chance of objects, but underlying the physics. And each of these wavelength bands is a little bit different, but ultimately it's needed to understand this group. So for next rays, we learn to make it a primary shot. This is the thermal content of the limit. The ISM density in some cases in the jet abundances in non-supernovas. From the optical domain, exploring secondary shots, shots passing through denser bases of the interstellar medium. We learned about densities, we saw the one that shows patients something about shot speeds and abundances, so less often than that shows. And radio wavelengths, we're mainly learning about particle acceleration and constant rate. But to understand these objects in flash, you clearly need to understand kind of all of your wavelength ranges, like the data from what we heard this morning, the infrared, and the radiation. So, my take on the galactic versus the galactic. Extra galactic sample is as follows, shown here. We have 1,400 at least extra galactic supernovas to study. We have only 294 galactic ones. They're detected in different wavelength bands. Almost all the radio remnants were first detected as all of the galactic ones were first detected as radio sources. And then subsequently, 30 or 40% of them were detected with optical X-rays. By contrast, for extragalactic remnants, nearly all of them were detected first as optical remnants, and 10 or 15% have been detected in some galaxies at other wavelengths. The advantages were outlined also this morning. You got lots of detailed information about individual objects with galactic remnants, but the disadvantages of the distances are poorly known, the surface of light very little, and that affects their appearance quite a bit. The advantages for extragalactic ones is the distance is known, absorption is less of a problem, and the disadvantages is that they're not always spatially resolved, and the photons are few. The Magellanic clouds are a sort of Goldilocks situation, they're a little bit more, but that's another talk. So, just to review here, so here's how we find the affirmative. So, if you look at the top, M33, as observed in X-rays, nice extended source here, there is no remnant. H-alpha, sulfur, so it is invisible. And what you see in the sulfur 2 image is that the H2 emission sort of fades compared to that sulfur 2 emission. That's how we find it. So that H2 is just typical brightness in the range for sulfur 2 H-alpha, which is about 0.1, supernova is about 0.4. X-ray only identifications have not been made generally. There are a few in the M33 and M31 particularly, since it could be a limiting factor. Radio IDs that exist are usually based on a non-thermal radio source that's in some ways conjoined with the H-alpha emission from the nebula. And in a few dead galaxies, we know that those identifications are pretty reliable because all of the non-thermal remnants, non-thermal sources that have been identified, one with spiral arms. So in 6936, where single legacy identified 35 remnants, we're pretty sure, 35 non-thermal remnants, we're pretty sure that the bulk of them are spiral remnants. Elsewhere, backgrounds of concern, backgrounds of concern. So the consequences of most radio identifications of supernova remnants have been through radio sources at position of optical terms. So, if you're going to try to address this problem, M33 is a pretty obvious place. nearby, has low extinction, very low inflation. It's a reasonable size, in contrast to 31, which is not a reasonable size. Well studied in the optical, there's interference filter imagery in H alpha and sulfur blue, as a result of the largest local group cameras in survey. And there's a deep X-ray chandra mosaic inside of it. Lots of supernova in Sonoma. At the time we wrote our paper in 2010, we knew about 137 of them. Lee analyzed the data from Hunter's survey, and they came up with their own list of 199 supernova remnants. There are 217 distinct objects in those two lists. X-ray is about 80 of the 137 supernova remnants that we knew then. And you can see this in these lines. The top picture here is the X-ray image of a portion of the southern spiral in 33 with the supernova remnants indicated in green. And similarly, you can see them in H alpha here, as mentioned in blue. Now, that radio wavelengths, the work, previous work that was done on M33 was done by Sean Gordon some years ago. Those are observations with the VLA and WSRT at 6.4 centimeters, and in a sense, it was about 300 microchannels. So they detected 53 optically identified supernova remnants as non-thermal, or at least the vital ones that were non-thermal. They detected them in 27 years. Subsequently, Jameer and Wilson have argued that there are actually 77 radio supernovas in 33 on the basis of non-thermal emission and association with H alpha, but these do not have the sulfur 2 H alpha criterion satisfied. Gordon assumed that most of those objects were background, and the left hand plot of the diagram shows the distribution of H2 regions of the supernova remnants and the background objects, which have also steep spectral ranges on the average. Gordon showed that basically that if you plotted the diameter of the object against the surface brightness, or the flux rather, there was a large range of flux of any particular radius. Illustrating once again something new from the MLC and the SMC, that signal ignite diagrams don't work very well, at least in individual objects. So what we decided, we wanted to do a new EVLA survey to find objects in supernova in 33. So we have observations with all three arrays of different wavelengths. And our goal was to reduce the sensitivity or improve the sensitivity of the Gordon catalog by a factor of 10 and to get better measurements of spectral indices. And the idea was this is roughly where Gordon was, where you can see some of the brighter rooms in the galaxy would be significant distance in 33, but any of our other things that paired objects would not. This would be greater than 1. So this is the result of that survey. I'll show them this image is the next two, this one and the next one. That's an H alpha image of M33 on the left. The low frequency portion of the 20 centimeter map that we produced on the right. And what you can see here is these things like the H2 region show up well in both H alpha and the 20 centimeter image, and you can see the southern star alarm. In both of these images. In fact, most of the objects that match up are H2 regions. Just for completeness, here's the high frequency end of the 20-centimeter image, very similar to low frequency one, and our 6-centimeter image also fairly similar to one another. So if you go through and you sort of look at each of the positions of the optically known supernova remnants in 33, I said there are 217 of these, 13 of which are outside of SRT, so they're probably 190 some odd. What we found from visual inspection is that 104 of those show up as not as, in the 20 centimeter images of the survey. 94 of those are in the 137 that we had originally identified. have another counter from the new ones involved every other week. So then you can plot the relative frequency of detection of supernova remnants of various diameter. The blue curve here is all the supernova remnants and distribution of diameters that we see in 33, all the optical data from supernova remnants, the distribution of diameters for the radio detected ones in our survey up here on the left, up here in the brain. And you can see it's pretty similar actually. We've got a pretty good sample of all the diameters in the room, but the radio remnants have a slightly lower median diameter when you look parsecs compared to 50 parsecs on the optical sample. And then to show you some examples of this, each one of these, this is four of the objects that we observed, and each of these panels has, each of these panels is the same, and all of them, I can show you like this, the same. There's a 6 centimeter image, a 20 centimeter image. The 20 centimeter image minus the 6 centimeter image, that's designed to find the objects that have steep separate spectral indices, the X-ray image here, and then on the bottom half is the H alpha, the sulfur 2, H alpha minus a tenth should be sulfur 2 minus a tenth of the H alpha, sorry, and then the band image. And so you can clearly see each of these images that are shown here, they show very well in the subtracted 20 minus 6 centimeter images, and these were all known before. They also show up in the sulfur 2 subtracted versions of this. So that's what good, what modern bright ones look like in the image. So there are a lot more non-thermal sources in the image, and the question is, or one of the questions that you want to answer is whether these are new supernova remnants or are they background sources. So one way of looking at that is to compare the positions of the sources that we find to the sources that were in the X-ray survey of the 33, where Coleman et al. Had 662 X-ray species. Now, the majority of the sources in the X-ray catalog of N33 are indeed background AGM, because the survey is sufficiently sensitive to miscount the number of sources up and compare them to the luminosity of AGN, luminosity function of AGN in the field. So we know that about 90%, close, not 90, maybe 80% are actually AGN. So the vast majority of that anyway. So it turns out if you look through the sample, you see many objects like this, you see many X-ray sources that have radio counterparts, and those radio counterparts tend to be monochrome. About 100 have radio counterparts, in fact. Most of all these have to be AGM. And so the big problem is going to be, when I finish, is going to be to sort out whether any of these are actually supernova remnants or not. Today, we don't have any supernova remnants, just from the radio. But here's the sort of thing, the process that we're going through. So this is one of the Coleman sources, 3H is the number. It's interesting because it clearly has a non-thermal component to the radio source, which is non-thermal. And maybe even a hint of extra sulfur 2 around this source, that's good. So that would be a good candidate for us. In this case, however, the source itself is quite bright in X-rays, and the toolkit of that analysis suggests it's a power law. It has a hard spectral index, X-ray spectral index, and so most likely that's a background AGN. It can also be more so using X-ray monitor and X-ray fruit. So our tentative conclusion right now is this is not a super. That's the sort of thing we need to do and look through the survey, and that's the part, the one part. If you just take the supernova remnants that we have identified, and you construct the luminosity function of them, that's shown in this curve here, the blue line, as compared to Gordon's curve, the slopes are about the same. There's an offset in luminosity, in the absolute luminosity scale, which we have to work out whether it's real or not. And I don't think we can answer that right now. If you plot the surface drawings of the sources in the assignment. We see what Warden also saw, basically, we see a huge range of blocks at any particular diameter. Several orders of magnitude here. This little region is probably it's excluded because we're probably not sensitive to very low surface brightness, large diameter objects, particularly with what we've done today. If you then also, one of the things you'd like to know, I said at the beginning, you'd like to be able to study these things at multiple wavelengths, so you want to know how many of the objects you detected in X-rays are also detected in the radio. And then on the left-hand side, that's what's shown us. That's what's shown here. This is the distribution on the x-axis of X-ray luminosity. And then the numbers of supernova remnants that are detected. So here the blue curve is all the supernova remnants, or the blue histogram, all the supernova remnants that are detected in X-rays, and then this is the number of them that are also detected in the radio. So this is sort of encouraging because it implies that we are detecting a sample that's similar to the two-way bands that we know. Now, if you take the X-ray luminosity and you compare it to the radio luminosity, you see there is a slight trend in both brightest X-ray objects, who tend to be the brightest radio objects, which is the blue thing. This is roughly where we are now. In the survey, I can show you the backup. That was the on the left-hand side is the sort of diagram we've been seeing several times today in the case of M33 of optical, X-ray, and radio remnants with the overlaps and the ones that are detected in various bands. Two things have happened. The numbers of optical candidates have increased, but more importantly, as a result of the survey, we've at least doubled the number of supernovas which are detected in all three bands. So, we're continuing to work on this. We think that the UDLA survey is a step in the right direction towards getting getting a complete understanding or getting a complete set of data, at least on the premier X-ray samples that exist or can exist. So far, we've expanded the sample by about a factor of two. We've more or less reached the sensitivity limit we said. We don't think there are a lot of radio-only supernova remnants, but there could be some, and we'll ask at some point. So I'll stop with that.
Thank you, Alex. Time for a couple of quick questions. Carlos.
The last time I looked at the previous work we had done, there weren't any really small remnants in the radio below 10 parsecs. Have you found any new?
I haven't found any new small remnants. But the sample is what the sample is, I think. And we talked about this in, I think, the 2010 paper. I think the fact is that we particularly both the optical and X-ray wavelengths, but the luminosity rise with radios for a while. And that can very well be true of also of the radio if you believe, if you're a believer in the existing models.
Another question here in the front, please.
Are the largest objects in your samples still supernova remnants or are they just light?
So I have this question this morning about type 1 and type 2. So my view is, and it's not the view that everybody shares, is that one should define these objects by their observational characteristics and not impose some arbitrary diameter on them. Whether they're bubbles or in physical reality, or supernova remnants, I don't know, and the arguments that there many of them have more bubbles is probably correct. On the other hand, I'm opposed to sort of taking sort of arbitrary cuts from observational characteristics and then saying that object is definitely not this because I don't believe we know it personally right now to do that. So I don't do that. That's what we're doing. And we've had, I would say that internally, when we publish a paper, we have this debate multiple times, whether it's not.
Yes, we've had conversations about that.
Yes.
I think we, one question, quick. Quick question. We have to move on, go ahead, quick.
Okay, good question. You mentioned you have 62 remnants, which has been optical, X-ray, and radio. Have you compared?
Yeah.
Right. Have you compared their diameters and morphology in general, and do they look similar in between the stickers?
No, I think we're still working on that. I mean, we don't know the imaging resolution, the radio imaging resolution is 5 hours seconds, so which means that we're not going to be able to determine their morphologies from the radio.
But this size is given diameters, I'm wondering if that can show similar in X-ray and radio.
I think it's going to be hard to determine because I think it's going to be hard to measure from the radio.
5 arc seconds at N33 is about 15 parsecs, so it's solid option. Okay, thank you, Dr. Can we move on?